and welcome to Blue Hat, the 11th version of Blue Hat. Thrilled to have you here this morning. My name is Andrew Cushman, and I will deliver the opening remarks this morning, and then kind of be the MC for this first section. I'd like to know how many people here are have been at Microsoft less than 5 years? And how many people here are, you know, have been to one or fewer Blue Hat conferences? So first time, great. Well, this is the 11th version. I've managed to be here for every single one of them, fortunately. And I thought I would start with some reflections about Blue Hat, because 6 years ago, in 2005, when we started this. This was a pretty edgy thing to bring hackers on campus. And I think that today we kind of forget about that. It's been a gradual shift, but it's actually been a massive cultural shift at Microsoft. And my first interactions with Blue Hat, my job was to actually introduce people to one another, to introduce people from the security researcher community to engineers. I had a pretty decent network at Microsoft. My job was to connect those two communities. I think it's a bit odd that today my job is to introduce themes. I still do the people introduction, but it's really about introducing themes for to challenge you and what I think are important things for you to be thinking about and challenges for Microsoft. You know, introducing people. At first, Blue Hat, I invited Adrian Marinesco from the Windows team, who he was the primary developer on the Windows heap. And in the green room, introducing him to some hackers, I used that shorthand that it happens at Microsoft all the time. It's like, oh, hey, Dino, hey, Matt Conover, this is Adrian. He owns the heap. And Frank Height said, that's really funny, because, you know, in Windows, everybody owns the heap. You know, we're in a way different spot today. I think that today, I really want to print up T-shirts and hand them out to my hacker buddies that say, I'm part of the Matt Miller fan club, because, you know, Matt's one of the primary guys behind our improvements on memory mitigations, ASLR and DEP. And, boy, that has changed how hackers think about the Windows platform. It's been a slow progression, but a massive change, as I said. And you can see that in the products that we're delivering. Whether, you know, across the board, from Windows and Office and SQL to the newer products, the phone, as well as the services that we deliver, there's a culture of security has been embedded in the product teams and in every part of Microsoft. You see that also in our representation. Today at Blue Hat, you're going to see speakers. Microsoft is going to be well represented among the speakers, and that's true also in the security conferences that you go to around the world. You'll see plenty of Microsoft participation where we are participating in the community and giving back and delivering cutting-edge research, cutting-edge work. My role has changed over time as well. I no longer do hacker outreach, and I no longer do manage the security response center. I still keep my finger in. I have those networks and I have that knowledge, but I've actually moved on to a team that's called the Trustworthy Computing Office of Global Security Strategy and Diplomacy. You know, people who knew me back in the day when I was working on Windows 2000 on IS5. They think it's just a riot that I work on a team that has diplomacy in the title. And I said, dude, that's not the guy I remember from Windows Shiproom arguing with Ian McDonald. Well, you know, growth does happen. And one of the items I'll highlight is that just as we realized as an engineering team that if you test the spec before you actually write the code and test the code, you're way more productive and you come out with a higher product, higher quality product. My role at this point is to see if I can help governments implement effective and reasonable and measurable security policies and regulations. Because I don't know about you, but it seems like I woke up one day and the whole world had moved from internet adoption to internet dependence. You know, every part of our lives today really is dependent upon computers and upon the internet. If you think about your milk for your morning coffee or for your morning cereal, you know, at every stage along there, computers had something to do with this. And if the internet were down or computers didn't function properly, you wouldn't be having milk with your coffee, because you either wouldn't have had the ATM wouldn't have worked for your, or the point of sale terminal wouldn't have worked. I'm sure that the feeding and the milking schedule at the farm is computerized, most likely in the United States anyways, maybe not in every country around the world, as well as the you know, the refrigeration and the microcontrollers that control the HVAC and the heating and the lighting systems in the grocery store. At every stage, computers are now an integral part of this. So today what I want to talk about in these brief introductory comments are, you know, some of the changes, both from a technological ones, I've talked about some of the changes that have happened at Microsoft already, and also some of the ecosystem changes that I see. And then I want to highlight some observations on what's important. I want to talk about this notion of adaptive change. You know, Microsoft has an organizational development class that's adaptive leadership. And I'm going to borrow some concepts from there that borrow from an HBR article, a Harvard Business Review article. And I want to highlight what I think of as the adaptive challenges today. I want to challenge you to think broadly about it. And I want to challenge you to continue to do the technical solutions, but also to do the adaptive solutions. This is another thing that, you know, unless you were paying really close attention, you might not have realized that there are 2 billion users online today, and there will be 4 billion users before we ship another 2 versions of Windows. You know, that first 1 billion users to get on the internet, that took a while. And most of this growth is not going to come from the United States. It's not going to come from Western Europe. China today has 450 million users, internet users. And that's less than a 30% penetration rate. They'll have 750 million internet users in a couple of years. In fact, they added more internet users in China from 2007 to 2010 than are currently online in the United States. When you think about IP traffic and where that's going to come from and how it's going to be sent, it's not going to, you know, we're going to hit that tipping point by 2015 where more traffic's going to go over wireless than over hardwire. And where's it going to come from? Well, it's not going to come from a laptop like this. It's going to come from a phone or a tablet, or more often it's going to come from devices talking to other devices. And then when you think about data, it's like everything that's in your pocket, everything that you interact with, whether it's your car, your refrigerator, your GPS, whatever it is going to be emitting data. And it's not about big pieces of data anymore. It's about small pieces of data that can be correlated. That's what machines do really well. It's like, here, let me just throw a bunch of data at it, you sift through it, and then come back and tell me what was interesting out of that. it's hypothesis free. You don't actually have to start with a hypothesis to do some data mining. You can just start with a bunch of data and then have the machines come back and tell you what they learned from that. And here's a slide that gives an indication of why it's important for trustworthy computing to actually have a team that focuses on policy. I mean, just going across the top row there with in the United States, here's policy that's been developed over the last decade, and here's what we think may happen as we go forward into 2013 and 2015. And what we're going to see is that's going to cascade around the world. And getting in front of this is critically important for Microsoft business groups. Because, I'll leave that and you can look at that on the slides later. So, as I mentioned earlier, I kind of woke up one morning and went, wow, we're just totally dependent on the internet. And I want to highlight that there's larger fundamental shifts that have happened here. It's no longer just about attacks on infrastructure. It's attacks against intellectual property at this point. What really people are after, you'll hear this later today, or later this morning, is that state actors are really interested in intellectual property. And everybody in this room creates intellectual property. And security is not about, oh yeah, those guys on network security or IT security or NetSec, they're going to take care of that and harden the outside. It's every person's job as that IP is created to think about, how am I going to protect this? How am I part of the solution about doing that? And it's not just about attacks against intellectual property. It's attacks against the foundations of how the internet works. Take a look at the attacks against Komodo and DigiNotar. And it's attacks against the business model. You know that orange link down there? Go check that out. Here's some hackers in Italy that did some really, really cool work that were really about challenging the Google business model or challenging the Amazon business model or the Facebook business model. That said, you know, we don't really like how this is. And then just take a look at some of the other things. You know, what was it, 6 or 7 months ago, everybody got the fact that phones were really a GPS and that could track your location, that came to the forefront. There was a lot of press about that. You know, when I think about other talks that I've seen recently, there was a talk at Black Hat this summer about facial recognition, where just from taking a picture as you're walking down the hall, about 2 hours later, they can actually figure out who you are and most likely what your social security number is. And this is just from other tagged photos on Facebook and databases that are readily available. And it's that kind of connection of disparate data. And then if you want to see a really cool talk, go back to Black Hat Europe last year and check out Don Bailey's talk on hacking microcontrollers. Because this is, they're in everything today, and we'll see a dramatic change over the next years of having these embedded in them. And you know the kinds of security problems that we saw back in the 90s, that's present in every single one of these microcontrollers. And so I would posit that there's a whole new world of attack surface with the Internet of Things. Like, this is just by vertical in terms of where these things are. And it's from big devices to little devices. So what I wanted to highlight at this point is this notion of adaptive change and adaptive challenges. And this was a couple of guys published an article in HBR and then books on this. Heifetz and Laurie, and they started their HBR article by talking about a guy that had a heart attack, and you know his doctor said, you really got to make some fundamental changes to your life. And I think that his idea was, look, can't you just give me some more pills or some medication, or can't you just operate on me and make this all fine? Those would be technical solutions. And you know, at Microsoft, the technical solution to that is, can't we just do a reorg? Or can't we just have a set of action items that need to go get ticked off? The doctor came back and said, actually, you need fundamental change. You need to start walking. You need to take the stairs instead of the elevator. You need to change your diet. You need to get more rest. You need to actually change your life, adapt your life. And I think that from a security perspective, we're in that same place, where the changes in the internet, the changes in attacks and attackers, those are all things that they kind of incrementally grew on us. And what's that story about the frog doesn't really know as it's in the boiling water till it's too hot and can't hop out anymore? The other metaphor that that Heifetz and Lohr use is to get on the balcony, to actually say, you know, if you go to a dance and somebody asks you how was the dance and you were having a great time, you know, your focus is on your partner. And they challenge you that as you're at the dance to get on the balcony and to take a look around and see how full the dance floor is, what the lighting looks like, what the interactions going are on. Get on the balcony. And that will help you identify the adaptive challenges and to come up with some adaptive solutions. So adaptive solutions are the ones that come from the bottom up. You know, often leadership comes top down, here's the things we have to go and do. And that one of the lessons in the adaptive leadership is that as a leader, you really need to nurture those kinds of challenges that come from the solutions that come from the bottom up. I think there's a couple of them that I'll highlight from the broader ecosystem, and Moxie Marlinspike's talk on convergence is clearly one of those. It's a solution that comes from outside anybody that has much to do with SSL. And yet, and it may not be perfect, but it's a very creative and a innovative solution. And it's going to help drive solutions here. Another talk from Black Hat this summer was that DARPA, that Mudge now works for DARPA, and he has fast-tracked a research program to figure out how to make it easier to lower the friction for DARPA and security researchers, for hackers to actually collaborate. And then Dan Kaminsky also talked at Black Hat this year about NetNube, which is a tool that he's creating to actually monitor network flows and network traffic for net neutrality. Again, it's like there's a business model, and here's some transparency that's being shown on that. You know, and Microsoft is participating in this kind of adaptive change as well, with a Blue Hat Challenge and a Blue Hat Prize. We're reaching out to the security researcher community to say, help us design technical solutions, help us design the next code. So adaptive change has two dimensions to it. One is that there's the technical solutions, and those are the ones that we already know really well. And in terms of security, technical solutions, that would be keep doing the things that we're doing. Keep implementing SDL. You'll hear talks today where the efforts that we've made have improved the security, and yet the risk profile is still maybe a little higher than we would like. Don't give up on those. Just take those other new challenges as growth opportunities. I would also highlight that as we go forward, the attackers are going to move from attacking software issues. It's not about buffer overflows anymore. It's about attacking those seams between services. It's about abuse. The feature works exactly as it was intended, as it was designed, but as you put those features together, there are seams where there are opportunities for abuse. And we need to take that same discipline, that engineering discipline that we applied to code that's embodied in SDL, and figure out how to make anti-abuse an engineering discipline along those lines. The other is that as security practitioners, we're going to hear today about the trade-off between features and security. And I was like, when I worked on IIS, I told a lot of customers that my job was to make security, was to make the system secure and to make it easy to use. I didn't have a choice of making it easy to use or secure. I had to do both. And that's kind of the quote from Mark Twain that, well, I would have written a shorter letter, but I didn't have time. Like, we have to solve both of those problems, because if security gets in the way, people are just going to turn it off. And so it is our challenge to write that short letter, to make security usable, to take the learnings from one domain and move them into the new ones, whether that's the phone or whether that's the cloud or whether that's services. And the other is, as you're listening to today's presentations, think about the adaptive challenges that we face. And not just about technical solutions, but think more broadly about what are the adaptive challenges here and what are some of the adaptive solutions that I might suggest. Because it's the bottoms-up solutions that are going to come from this group of people. And if you look at one of the trends that I've seen is that security is that technical features always outpace security, and we have to change that dynamic. We have to make it so that security advances keep pace with the functional advances. If they don't, then we'll never get out of this coming from behind trend.